This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Welcome to the Investor Download, the podcast about the trends driving markets and the economy now and in the future. I'm your host, David Brett. The next two shows are all about China. Today we discuss exactly how it seems to have controlled coronavirus much better than everyone else.
The other economies, manufacturing, were more badly hurt, whereas in the case of China, having a supply chain that is more complete and more comprehensive, when the economy reopened, they were able to get production going on into a full speed quite quickly.
How its economy has bounced back better than everyone else.
A lot of measures probably are only applicable in China, as you know that the Chinese government lay out very restrictive quarantine measures on individuals.
And what it did over the last 40 years of reforms to transform its economy into the second largest in the world.
And most years, when you look back, the reform has been in small steps, but cumulatively, the China's economic reform has been all successful.
Hello, how are you? I hope you're all safe and well. COVID-19 has cast a rolling cloud over the near-term global investment outlook. One of the few countries to have handled this crisis well is China.
The COVID-19 pandemic continues to spread, with over 1 million lives tragically lost so far. Employment remains well below pre-pandemic levels. The ascent out of this calamitous great lockdown is likely to be long, uneven, and highly uncertain. We continue to project a deep recession in 2020. Global growth is projected to...
And while the global economy is faltering in the wake of the pandemic, China's bouncing back.
China's economy bounced back even further in the third quarter, as the country's GDP shot up by 4.9% between July and September of this year. And while that's not quite as strong as analysts hoped, it still suggests consumer confidence is returning after the shock caused by the global health crisis. It's one of the few success stories of economic recovery from the crisis. And policymakers around...
China's economy is huge, second in size only to the US. It's the world's largest exporter and second largest importer, so it's hugely important to the global economic recovery. China also accounted for 28% of all growth worldwide in the 5 years from 2013 to 2018. That's more than twice the share of the United States, according to the International Monetary Fund, and it expects more of the same over the first half of the 2020s. China also has the world's second largest bond market, yet it's under-owned by global investors. Foreign ownership estimated by most investment banks is under 3% of the total Chinese bond market cap. Despite its size and prowess, China remains an enigma.
It's a mystery. The Chinese market, unfortunately, can be seen both from the top down and the bottom up. The top down part of it is kind of wanton in what they do.
So, over the next two podcasts, we're going to discuss China, how it became so vital to the world economy and its outlook for the next few years, why it still remains a mystery, and how investors can unlock its potential. And I've got two China experts to help me from Schroders.
Hi, I'm Julia Ho. I head the Asian Macro Desk.
Hi, everyone. This is Jack Lee, fund manager at Schroders, responsible for China Asia as investing.
In the first show, to help better understand China, we're going to look at how it reformed its economy into the behemoth it is today and how it plans to evolve in the future. But in the first part of the show, we're going to better understand how it dealt with the pandemic seemingly better than anyone else and why its economy is bouncing back quicker than everywhere else.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
Contessa, the World Health Organization has declared the coronavirus outbreak a public health emergency of international concern. They are saying they are doing this not because they don't have confidence in the way China is responding to this outbreak.
Let's start with the coronavirus, in particular what China has done differently from most of the rest of the world, in particular the West. While Europe and the US continue to struggle to contain the virus and their economies struggle as a result, China's economy has roared back, relatively speaking. According to the International Monetary Fund, China's economy is expected to grow around 2% in 2020. Hardly blowing the lights out, but it is if you compare it to the more developed economies. The US, for instance, is expected to contract 4.3%, Germany's to shrink by 6%, and the UK's by nearly 10%. So when everyone else has struggled, how has China come through this crisis in much better shape?
The authorities eased quite a bit, both in monetary policies and in fiscal policy terms. And this had clearly cushioned the growth shock from the pandemic.
Like the West, the Chinese government has pumped huge amounts of money into its economy and directed its banks to support small and medium-sized businesses.
A measurement for the credit growth is called total social financing. So basically, it's a measurement of how much credit is being created in the system. So at the beginning of this year, the number was tracking at about 10% year-on-year growth. But when the COVID hit the economy, the government decided to pump additional credits in the system in order to support the economy. So that's why we're starting to see the total social financing rebounding from 10% to about 13.7% to the latest figure. And all these measures are helping to cushion the shock in the economy. And at the same time, they also direct the financial institutions to support the small, medium enterprises.
And as since you have seen the Chinese economy rebounding quite strongly, supported by the fact that exports were actually benefiting from the fact that in the other economies, manufacturing were more badly hurt, whereas in the case of China, having a supply chain that is more complete and more comprehensive, when the economy reopened, they were able to get production going on into a full speed quite quickly. And that basically helped them to export more to the rest of the world, especially in terms of medical supplies, equipment, and it evolved into electronic products as well as home furnishing products because more people stay at home, so they want to do up their homes. So China benefited from it.
So while most of the rest of the world lay dormant, China's huge industrial and manufacturing machine cranked into gear.
As we observe, most of the economic activities has resumed. In particular, the manufacturing operations in China, I think it's more or less back to normal level. I think the interesting anecdotes that we observe from some of the listed companies is that some of these companies are actually benefiting from the business spillover from overseas competitors. And well, it's largely because the other overseas competitors are facing different degree of production disruptions. So therefore, some buyers, you know, they sort to the Chinese suppliers due to the reliability of the supply at this juncture. Even for some offline service business activities are also almost back to normalized level before the COVID. Take the hotel sector, for example, we note that the leading hotel chains are already back to pre-COVID level as supported by domestic business activities.
An extraordinary recovery given the virus is still lingering. Yet some of the measures taken by China were seen as draconian by the West.
Tonight, the Chinese city of Wuhan and nearby towns locked down. No trains, flights, or mass transit. 25 million people effectively quarantined and nervous. Airports around the region stepping up screening. Workers in hazmat suits checking arrivals.
These are drastic measures by authorities here in central China to contain a virus that's fueling fears of a pandemic.
As you can see, obviously, the tiny and decisive measures taken by the Chinese government to contain the outbreak of the pandemic is definitely helping. Well, take Wuhan, for example, in January, when the outbreak starting to begin, and then you see the entire city is being locked down, and then, so that, you know, the disease is not spreading over to other parts of China. And also a lot of measures probably are only applicable in China As you know that, you know, the Chinese government lay out very restrictive quarantine measures on individuals when they are under suspicions of any infection, and also also putting strict control on public areas, including the transportation, to make sure that people are wearing face masks to control the contagion. And not to mention about the compulsory tests are being done on a lot of seriously infected area. On, let's take Wuhan, for example, that, you know, it's basically the entire city, the populations are being required to engage in the testing so that, you know, the asymptomatic cases of the individuals could be discovered, and as long as they are not transferring the disease to the others. And of course, well, with the strong administrative power in China, the government is able to, you know, to achieve a lot of things which are quite unlikely to be done in other places. For example, they can construct the medical facilities within a very short period of time to take care of the infected patients. And also a lot of medical practitioners or volunteers, they are being sent all from all over China to support the seriously affected area.
Certainly, that basically makes China quite different from the Western part of the world. And also, I think the culture, to some extent, in China is also a factor, and that there is less resistance to all the social distancing measures and mask wearing. And perhaps that has helped China to able to contain the pandemic a bit more effectively, and therefore also help its economy to reopen and recover better than the other Western economies.
For the time being, then, China is proving that there doesn't have to be a binary choice between controlling the virus and saving the economy. If citizens abide by the rules and there is a firm and consistent message from the government, life can carry on without the virus getting out of control. It also helps that China is the world's global manufacturing powerhouse. Manufacturing accounted for nearly 30% of its economic output in 2018, according to the website Statista, compared with around 17% in the US. They say timing is everything, and perhaps the fact that China isn't further down the road into transitioning to a consumer-led economy has helped it weather the COVID storm. And it's not just weathering the storm. The World Bank October 2020 report forecasts China's economy to grow by 7.9% in 2021. So the economy is getting back on track, but what about the stock market?
Yeah, as for the China A-shares market, is definitely one of the best performing equity market this year as comparing to a lot of even emerging markets. And in my opinion, what is the main driver this year for the China A-shares market is, when you look at China, this is probably the only place that you can find a very certain growth this year, despite all these uncertainties going on with other mature market, or due to the COVID impact. And when you look at the Chinese economy this year, obviously, as we discussed earlier, the COVID has been largely under control. And at the same time, the government definitely got the firepower to support the economy. So that's why the certainties of this market is the least. And not to mention that we, during this year, have witnessed quite a lot of foreigners. They are still very keen on the Chinese access. As you're probably aware that China A-shares market has been included in the MSCI benchmark since 2018. So in the investors' portfolio, China A-shares market probably are still underweight or underrepresented. So that's why they are still very willing to allocate this market at this time. So I think that all these are probably adding up to the optimism towards the China A-shares market.
It's not just the stock market that's been attractive to investors. Its bond market is proving a big pull too.
The bond market has been, from a foreign investor perspective, the bond market's main performance contributor is actually from the currency, which has actually done very well. On a year-to-date basis, the currency is up by 8%. For the bond market, it basically the yield having dropped to as low as about 2.6% on the 10 years. It has corrected quite sharply as the Chinese economy has been able to recover, and also the policymakers, which is a central bank primarily, has started to become less generous in the liquidity addition that they did earlier in March and April. So as a result, the bond yields have gone back up to around the same level as the pre-COVID time.
So the stock market's booming, bond yields are attractive, and the economy's recovering. But China hasn't always been the global powerhouse it is seen as today. It's taken many years of reforms to get to this position, and there's many more to come. So in the next section of the show, we're going to look at how China's reformed its economy.
Get in touch with us by email at schroederspodcasts@schroeders.com or visit our website, schroeders.com/investor download.
The deep structural reality is that China has been becoming wealthier, more sophisticated, more able, based on its own indigenous capabilities, to do higher tech things for 40 years. And its interests outside its own borders have been expanding as well. For
the first China's time, rise from a poor developing country to a major economic power in about four decades has been spectacular. From 1979, when economic reforms began, to 2017, China's real gross domestic product, that's GDP, grew at an average annual rate of nearly 10%. China experienced the fastest sustained expansion by a major economy in history and lifted more than 800 million people out of poverty. That's according to the World Bank.
China has basically adopted quite a gradual approach in its reform over the years. Most years, when you look back, the reform has been in small steps, but cumulatively, China's economic reform has been all successful.
Some of the key measures include
distributing land to farmers in rural areas, introducing market mechanism in the economy, establishing special economic zones to attract foreign direct investments, and following the Asian financial crisis, China pushed its reforms even further by restructuring its state-owned enterprises or state-owned companies and the banking system to make them more market-oriented, more determined by market forces, and reform also the housing market to allow for more widespread private housing ownership. And most importantly, in early 2000, China joined the WTO, the World Trade Organization, and this is done because China wants to integrate its economy much more with that of the global economy. In so doing, all these reforms have basically helped China to be amongst the fastest growing economies over the past 10 to 15 years. And indeed, since China opened up its foreign trade and investment and implementing free market reforms, China has been clearly the fastest growing economies with GDP growth averaging around 10% over the last, maybe up to 2018, over the last 10 years, up to 2018.
China's economy has made huge strides over the last 40 years, but the government remains cautious and steady in its approach to reforms as it tries to mitigate risks to its financial system.
There must be some limits as to the openness of the Chinese capital market. And if I have to make a guess, I think the Chinese authority definitely would like to take things on a more gradual approach, and the real ultimate bottom line for the opening up schedule is to ensure the stability of the financial system so that it is ensured that it will not subject itself to any external risks when there is some sort of financial shock.
They have been trying to manage the risk of the volatility of foreign investors, because foreign investors sometimes when on sign of instability in terms of the currency, foreign investors could actually be rushing for the exit. So they have been very, very careful on that aspect.
But if it is to take the next step and truly challenge the US as the world's economic powerhouse, it will most likely have to accept some risk and open up its economy to more external investment.
At this juncture, I think China probably also need to rely more on the external capital flows to support its various industries, and particularly the high-tech sectors, where China definitely need more foreign experience and capitals to develop and overcoming its current weakness. In my opinion, the further opening up of the financial markets is definitely paving the way for China to, in a later stage, internationalize its currency, because you need a capital market for be ready to global investors in order to allow people to allocate the capital to this economy.
The country has already made a significant move to make its currency more attractive to the outside world. The renminbi became a legitimate reserve currency in 2016 when it became part of the International Monetary Fund's special drawing rights basket. The basket is made up of currencies that are most important in global trading and financial markets. It's a prestigious club, and only four other currencies, the euro, the US dollar, Japanese yen, and the British pound. At the moment, the renminbi only accounts for around 2% of international reserves held in central banks and only 2% of global payments by value. But Ho expects this to grow in the coming decades as China's share in the global economy rises further.
One can actually expect central banks' allocation to the Chinese currency to continue to expand. In fact, it should start to expand more rapidly, and especially in a world whereby you have zero interest rates and negative yields. Chinese currencies still have positive yields and very attractive pickup over many of the developed market currencies. This basically would mean that the underlying demand for the Chinese currency is going to be strengthened. And with the central bank's demand for the Chinese currency, it should also help to spur more demand from China's trading partners to use the Chinese currency on a more widespread basis for trade invoicing, which could eventually, just like the US dollar, could become the currency of choice for trading in a world of zero and negative yields for all the other SDR member currencies, which are basically namely US dollar, euro, the Japanese yen, and UK. And it is also important to note that China is, after all, the largest exporter and the second largest importer in the world. So it would only be natural for its trading partners to want to use Chinese yuan as an invoicing currency for trade with China.
How China plans to liberalise its economy is the responsibility of the 19th Communist Party Central Committee and its leader, President Xi. The party held its fifth plenary session in October, where it set out its five-year economic and development plan, which was due to begin in 2021. The plan includes targeting high-quality growth, which is essentially an extension of China's previous objective of becoming a middle-income society, developing its own technology and becoming less reliant on the US and the target of green living style.
This fifth plenum that just took place in China is also a very special one. It does not just map out the 14th five-year plan for China, and for the first time, it actually also formulate a long-term economic structure to achieve a presidency's vision for 2035. Although the goals outlined in the plans, especially for presidency's 2035 vision, may appear a little bit ambitious, it is not aggressive, especially when with regards to achieving a technology powerhouse status, as well as to have its income level to be similar to that of middle developed economies. This is basically just doubling of China's GDP per capita in 15 years' time. And this goal is not unrealistic, because China has already doubled its income level before, from 2010 to 2020. To the current level of 10,000. So back in 2010, it was about 4,000. So they took 10 years to double, but this time the doubling of income is going to take 15 years. The reason why they are targeting to double the income in 15 years' time, this time is really a reflection that Beijing is very serious about containing leverage and financial risk. And at the same time, it really meant what it says, that it's focusing on quality growth rather than growth at any cost in the past, which was how they go about their economic plans before. So, and in terms of the being a technology powerhouse, once again, it is not unrealistic because China already is leading in terms of 5G for its rollout, and as well as if you look at the extent of its research and development spending for technology, it is still low compared to the developed countries. So it clearly has room to spend more on research and development. And that will basically means that China is going to be able to catch up on its technology capabilities, and will in turn means that they become more self-sufficient, and they will also end up building, end up securing their so-called supply chain, which at the moment they are still dependent, especially for key technology components. They're still dependent on importing all these components. So in time to come, maybe in 2025, they could be more self-sufficient in this area. And also at the same time, while focusing on developing, boosting domestic demand, domestic production, domestic distribution, by emphasizing, urbanization, which clearly is still not complete because urbanization in China is still low compared to some of the more developed Asian economies like Korea and Japan. They are also looking to ensure that the economy remains very open for foreign investments. So hence, they have continued to open up their markets to foreign investments, as well as open up their economy for foreign direct investments as well. About a year ago, Tesla has doubled up their investments into China. It's a good case in point that China is clearly open for business to foreign investors.
Plenty on the government's plate to tackle then. More actionable steps will be revealed in the upcoming two session meetings in March. Yet despite China's plans and its seeming willingness to open up its market to foreign investment, it remains relatively untapped by international investors, which presents a huge opportunity.
As you can see, China market is still a place that can offer more rapid growth than many other countries in the world. Obviously, telling from the GDP growth is much higher than many parts of the world. And I think most importantly, for the size of the market or the economy with this scale, there are available tremendous room for foreign capitals to deploy. The asset class, as I said, currently is still pretty underrepresented among many global investors, where this meaning for asset allocation, there could be more continuous capital flows continue to show up the market for many years to come. And with the economy, which is continuously changing, and there are lots of innovations and involvement in the economy, there are many interesting smaller size companies that could potentially grow into much bigger scales, into much bigger companies over time in this market. So I think these are the very interesting opportunities for global investors.
Which is the perfect place to leave it. A nice little tease for next week's show, when we'll be looking more in depth at the economic outlook for China, as well as the opportunities for investment that it presents. My thanks go to Julia Ho and Jack Lee, who've guided us through everything to do with China this week. They'll be back next week for more of the same. But if you want to read more, you can go to schroders.com/insights. Remember, you can listen to more at schroders.com/the investor download, where there'll also be some related articles. Get in touch with us schroders@schroders.com if you've got any questions or any ideas for future shows. And you can rate, review and subscribe to us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. New shows available every Thursday and most Mondays from 5 p.m. UK time. But above all, keep safe and go well. Cheers.